Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally, 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on likelihoods for 2009 right after this. You know, a $10 pizza has a 38% tax on it, and a Budweiser six-pack has a 43% tax, and a fifth of Jack Daniels costs 72% of its purchase price in tax. Now, governments tax us all, and they tax anything that wiggles, moves, or squirms. But what is it that government does to produce, to prepare, or to deliver, for which the government's getting paid 38% for a pizza, 43% for a beer, and 72% for a drink? Does the guy in the pizza parlor make a 38% profit on that pizza that they have to buy the ingredients to make, prepare it, cook it, serve it, and then pay rent on the store where you sit to eat it? And why is it that the government's getting paid more in tax than the people who actually produce, prepare, and deliver the goods and services that we all buy? And if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. Remember, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Now, our Tax and Status School is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Now, once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? All right, we've been reviewing the Money Changer. The Money Changer is a newsletter put out by Franklin Sanders. It's called The Money Changer. Comes out monthly, 12-page tabloid newspaper. Guy's an economist and a gold broker. He's a conservative, right-wing, reactionary, fanatic. Probably votes a straight Republican ticket, you know, kind of right winger, a crazy lunatic, as the government, I guess, would classify him. Now, why do I read this kind of propaganda? Sometimes people will say, you know, you're into this conspiracy theory, aren't you? And I tell them, yeah, I am. I am a conspiracy theorist. That's what they label people like me. That is, normal people label people like me as conspiracy theorists. And so they went, well, why do you believe such poppycock? And I believe that there's a conspiracy out there in the international geopolitical realm because I don't believe that all of the bad things that go on in the world can happen accidentally. I think somebody out there is pulling the strings, and the reason I think they're pulling the strings is because if it was just random chance, good things would happen accidentally also, and there isn't anything out there that's good. And if there is, send me an email, let me know what it is, would you? I'd like to hear it. So, frankly, I'm not here to tell you that Sanders knows some right-wing conspiracy theorist. I don't know that. I don't talk to him, you know, on a regular basis. But he, along with others, believe that the solution to the problems that we're facing worldwide, nationally, and locally, right here at mom and pop store, is that we need gold and silver coin, a return to Article 1, Section 10 of our Constitution, and that if we would practice just weights and balances instead of fiat currency, we would all be better off, that we would have a better economy, a better economic system. And I'm one of those. That's what I'm thinking. But the conversation in economics is never between gold and silver and paper. It's just paper and different colors of paper and then more paper or less paper, but it's always going to be paper. And paper is the problem. Debt is a problem. The Bible tells us don't charge usury. Don't pay usury. And so we've all got credit cards. We got houses we're buying on time. And we've got a big debt that we owe on our automobiles and our other consumer goods. And then we wonder why it is when we lose our jobs that we're in such economic straits. Well, it's because we don't have any money. And somebody's going to say, well, I got a lot of money. It's in the bank. Well, if you've got money in the bank, you don't have any money. You have a lot of credit. You don't have any money. Then somebody's going to say, well, that's cash. Well, the definition of cash in the legal dictionary is gold and silver coin. That's what cash is. And so I see people running around. They're calling their $20 Federal Reserve notes cash. Well, I've got cash here. I look at them like, you must have been to public school, son. That's where you learn these kinds of deceptive practices. Well, Franklin Sanders wrote a lead article in the January 2009 issue that I've been reviewing for you, and it's called Likelihoods. What's likely to occur? Now, he says that he thinks that hyperinflation is unlikely. And I said, and in the same paper, by the way, he wrote an article on surviving hyperinflation. So at least it's in the back of his mind, or he wouldn't have written the article on hyperinflation. So I think that hyperinflation is more likely to occur than just ordinary inflation. And the reason for that is that the government has just doubled the money supply in 4 months. And the definition, as Sanders points out, for hyperinflation is 10% increase per month, 120% a year, compounded now monthly. And then he gave the numbers, and I gave those to you last time, on what happens when you're living through 10% inflation, 20% inflation, and 30% inflation when we're buying a loaf of bread or a gallon of gas. And that's what's coming. So I'm betting on the hyperinflation. And he wrote a pretty good article here, and I'm on page 11 here, where he's talking about keep hyperinflating cash to an absolute minimum. All right, so I'm already doing that. See, I've been out of dollar-denominated assets now for many years. Most people would say, well, you're an American. I never claimed to be. I'm looking out for old number one, if you want to know my personal view on it. I'm looking out for George Gordon. I'm not looking out for the economy or the nation or anything else. I'm looking to survive this, not go down with it. Now, if you want to go down with the Titanic, that's your choice. I'm looking to get off this thing. I never would have got on it had I known where it was going. But, you know, we all got on the boat, and this is the great ship America. Now, the great ship America has got a great big hole down the side of it, and it's going to sink. That's the bottom line. 62% of Americans believe that the government's going to bail us out of this temporary recession. It ain't a temporary recession, number one. You're already in depression, and that's number two. Depression now is where your living standards are decreasing. That's depression. Deflation's what they've been selling us, and deflation's good for us. When was the last time you wrote a letter to your senator and said, my God, get the price of gasoline back up to $4 a gallon. This deflation's killing us. Now, if you're an Arab oil sheik, I can imagine the Arabs writing letters to our Congress and saying, my God, get the price of oil back up to $150 a barrel. We're really hurting over here. That makes all the sense in the world. But, you know, for the guy that's buying gasoline for $4 a gallon, when it drops to $2, that's good news, isn't it? That's called deflation. I think deflation's the greatest thing since sliced white bread. I want more of it. If $2 gas is bad, give me more bad news, would you? All right, now, with that in mind, take a look at housing now. in 2005, housing peaked. And I think that the sell-off started around sometime in mid-2006. I don't have charts right in front of me here, but, you know, a couple of years ago, this thing reached its peak and it started falling. Well, Bob Chapman, who's another one of these right-wing gold bug nuts, you know, fruitcake cases over here, said back in 2005 and 6, he said, now sell all of your stocks, get rid of that crap. And then if you've got any real estate over here that you don't need, you know, you need a house to live in, you might need 40 acres to live on, or you might need 5 acres, you know, to cut wood, and, you know, you need a little retreat or a survival place, 5-10 acres or something like that. He says, keep that. Make sure it's free and clear. But you know, that big house that you've got out here in Bellwood Estates, dump that thing because you're not going to be able to make the payments on it here pretty shortly, and the value of it is going to decrease. This is when houses in San Francisco were selling for $650,000. So I got to tell you a little story here. I got a daughter, and she lives out in Phoenix, Arizona, and one day my wife was talking to her. Sweet girl. I mean, you know, everybody loves their daughters. My daughter isn't just ordinary. She has a degree from college. In fact, I think she's got a master's degree. She's a CPA, works for a big bank, makes a lot of money. And she's living in a house, and I think at the time, I forget exactly what the numbers are, but it was a bunch of money. Years ago, the house that they were living in, they had a mortgage on it for $232,000. And when they moved from that house, they kept the house. They had to move around because of her husband's job, and they had to actually take money out of their paycheck to make up the difference between the rent that they were receiving for the house and the payments on it. Now, that was at 232. Now, this we're talking about, you know, 15 years ago or so. I don't know, 10 years, 15 years ago. And so I tucked that one away in my heart, and then some time went by. Well, over the years, my daughter moved back to Phoenix, and so they moved back into their house, and now the mortgage is paid down from 232 to something, I don't know exactly, but something. And then this housing bubble took off, you know, 2003, 4, 5, 6, you know, along in there. And this house inflated to around $600,000. If I remember that right, I think she told us it was $600,000. And so, reading the International Forecaster, my wife said, now, Elaine, you probably ought to sell that house for $600,000 right now while the market's hot. And then you'll walk out of there with about $400,000 cash. You can move to Jacksonville, Florida, you know, with your experience and with your degrees and all. You can get a job in any bank you want to. And you and Frank can move to Jacksonville, Florida, buy the same size house for $150,000 cash and pocket $250,000. Put that into gold coin, bury it in a hole in the ground, and you'll have a pretty sizable nest egg to weather the coming economic storm. And my daughter said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to stay right here in Phoenix. I've always wanted to live in a $600,000 house, and now my dream has come true. I've reached the pinnacle of my success. And so my daughter, who now has a degree, she's a CPA. This lady has a master's degree. She's a very intelligent young woman. Nothing wrong with her smarts and so on. She's educated. See, I'm not. I'm a high school dropout. Now, but I'm an old man, and I've been around the block 3 times, and I've been watching these things go on, and I read history books, and I talk to these old-timers, and I talk to my Aunt Bessie, you know, years ago, and I talk to my Uncle Buster and Uncle Lyle and Granny, and, you know. And so my viewpoint in life is something different than the average person today, average young person today, yuppies they call them. And so sure enough, between 2006 and today, her house is now worth less than the mortgage against it, which is where they started this escapade, you know, a few years back. Now, they don't have the gold in the ground. They don't have the house that's bought and paid for, and they're still making mortgage payments on the house they've got. Now, in addition to that, we're now headed into a god-awful, massive depression. Depression. That's a loss of living standards. And as time progresses along, her job will be outsourced to India. How do I know that? Well, she had a job at a bank a few years ago, and her job was outsourced to India, and she got to train her replacement. came over here from India, trained here under my daughter, and then went back to India and took her job. Okay, now, if that sounds like you've heard this story before, this is where you came into the movie, well, that's, you know, what goes around comes around. Now, our government is following policies here that is just bound and determined to create this hyperinflation. They're doing the same things the Germans did, same things the Brazilians did, same things all the banana republics have done in the past. And so my bet is we're going to have the same results that the Germans got and the Brazilians got and the Argentines and everybody else that's followed these crazy policies, these economic policies of inflate and tax and spend. Inflate and tax and spend. Now, I got to tell you, it feels real good. But, you know, it feels real good down at Flo's Whorehouse, too. I don't deny that. Hell, you know. People don't go into the whorehouse because it hurts real bad. And they go to the whorehouse because it feels real good and they love it. But that does not mean that the whorehouse is a good plan or that it's a good thing to be following. And the same thing is true here with economics. I don't deny that tax and spend and inflate feels real good and it stimulates the economy and it makes our balance sheets go up and we just feel real good about it all. But there's a hangover that comes from it. These are called recessions. These recessions get more and more severe. As the economies of nations get more and more out of balance, there finally comes a point in time when there's no resuscitation possible. Now, that's just the history of it. And we've been through hyperinflations in this country before. The last one was in 1783. The one before that was in 1756. Now, it's true that between 1787 and today, we have not had another hyperinflation here in the United States. We've had depressions and recessions, and we've had gold and silver, and we've had fiat paper currency. But now we're doing the same things that create this. And my point is that Sanders has his feet on the ground, and he writes articles in this newsletter. And I don't get paid by Sanders. I want you to know that I'm not getting any commissions, and he's not. I haven't talked to Sanders on the phone for a year or two. Maybe three or four. It's been a while since I've talked to him. I know him. I talk to him once in a while, every three or four years, when the time is right or something comes up. But the moral to the story is the guy makes sense, and he's writing about it and telling you, hey, pay attention here. So I thought I'd share this with you, that when you're talking about accounts receivable in a hyperinflation, you don't want to have any accounts receivable. You want cash up front, or at least on delivery. Offer discount for upfront payers. I used to do that. I used to sell furniture. You got a 10% discount for paying cash in advance. That was pretty standard. Now I've got your money to work on. Cut off slow payers. Offer no credit. Because if you offer credit, you're going to get burned. See, take a look now at where people are. The banks can't pay their bills. And so the government now is authorizing, the Federal Reserve is authorizing the expansion of the money supply. They've doubled it in 4 months. Well, if they double it every 4 months, isn't that a 300% increase per year? Now, 10% a month, you know, is not very far away. Pricing. You must change your prices often and sharply enough to reflect the inflation's impact. And you're going to lose customers when you do that. But if you're going to keep your purchasing power, if you're going to stay in business, it's the way you got to do it. So your total business volume is going to drop off. But your profit's going to be maintained, your purchasing power profit. And if you can't do that, well, then you can't stay in business, and you'll just be another casualty. Now, there are additional difficulties, he points out. He says, government action. Government action. The government is right now acting. It's an activist government. They're going to take action. The people demand it. The people expect it. Joe Sixpack. Well, do something. Okay, so government is going to do something. So here's what you can expect. Wage and price controls. Wage and price controls. So they're simply going to say you can't have higher wage increases than this amount right here. and you can't increase your prices any more than this amount right here. All right, let me tell you what happens here. We bought a building back in the Nixon price control era. Remember, Richard Nixon put on wage and price controls. And we were running an apartment house. And we had just bought the Raymond Apartments. And this thing, at best, was a break-even because of the price we paid, the mortgage, the financial structure of it. And we needed to renovate apartments and then raise the rent in order to support the economic structure. And then right in the middle of this, here comes price controls, and we can't raise rents. We could spend $1,000 and renovate an apartment, but you cannot raise the rent. All right? How many thousands of dollars do you think we spent on renovations? How many gallons of paint do you think we bought? And the answer is zero. None. Now, there was a complex modality. You could go down here to some board and you could tell them what your hardship story was, and maybe in 6 months you could get an authorization to raise the rents. And if you don't, see, they're publicizing this. If you raise the rent on your tenants, he's going to run down, complain. Now, this is against the law, so then they want to come out here and fine you and put you in jail. But that's the way bureaucrats function. They don't have any business sense at all. That's why they work for government. If a government worker had to go out into the real world and make a living, he'd starve to death. He can't make it in the real world. That's why he works for government, where it doesn't make any difference what the economies are. It doesn't have to make economic sense. That's why you have $600 hammers coming out of Boeing and Lockheed and toilet seats for $600. The economics of it don't make any sense, but they don't have to. They have a bottomless supply of money. Comes from the taxpayers, coming from you. Now, you people out there are running out of money. And then one of these days, these people in government are going to meet reality. And when they meet reality, it is there simply aren't any goods on the shelves. Now, that's where reality, or the rubber meets the road. Now, the reason I bring this to your attention is that the average American does not understand economics and cannot count. So I thought I'd pass this on to you. It's time to learn how to count. And if you're in business and you can't count, you're going to be a casualty. And if you're in business, you need that business, because you're not going to be able to work for wages. You're going to have, you wage earners out there, watch what's coming. We just saw it in Argentina. Picture this. You're working for a company. Let's call it Procter & Gamble in Buenos Aires. And you're going to work every day, and they're paying you $10 an hour. Okay? Now, during this economic turmoil that just went on down in Argentina, and unemployment topped out at 62%, the Procter & Gamble people now are watching the economy. So they're economizing all they can in pesos and conducting their business in dollars. Now, the people of Argentina are conducting their business in pesos because they don't have access to dollars. They're not a multinational corporation. But the multinational now, it can compete because they can use dollars to buy, sell, and trade with. So they're running their factory, and they're paying you $10 an hour. Now, as unemployment increases, more and more people are knocking on Procter & Gamble's door and saying, "We would like to go to work here." And so Procter & Gamble says, "Well, we don't need anybody. You see, we're fully staffed, and we don't need anybody. We're not expanding our production." And the people that are knocking on the door say, I will take a cut in pay. Now, I was making $10 an hour working over here at the Fitzgerald Bearing Company, but I would be willing to work for $8 an hour here at Procter & Gamble. Now, you know, you're a businessman, and here's a guy comes in, he's looking for a job. He says, "I'm willing to work for $8 an hour, but you're already working here, and you're making $10. Isn't this just special? And so this is called wage pressure. The pressure on the wage structure is down. Not up, it's down. And so Procter & Gamble says, "Well, gee, I could get rid of old Joe over here, paying him $10 an hour, and I could hire Sam over here. He'll work for $8. And so Procter & Gamble fires you and hires this guy over here for $8 and puts him in there. Now, as unemployment continues on, some other guy comes in and says, I'll work for $6. The next one says, I'll work for $4. What you're facing here is a race to the bottom. Now, you people in Detroit working for the car companies, can you see this race to the bottom? In fact, with this bailout money, did you notice Congress said, you people have to take wage cuts. Did you hear the wage cuts? Well, that's because you've got these competitors called Toyota. That's because you abolished your tariff system. You see, in your Constitution, I don't know if you were aware of this, you all went to public school, but did you know that the federal government was financed by these tariffs? That's the way our founding fathers decided that they would finance the federal government. Not with income taxes. Not with a tax structure at all. They said, if the French want to sell wine in the United States of America, they have to pay the government a fee to come in here and sell it, which we will set the fee so that the price of French wine is always more than domestic wine, so it never harms or hurts the domestic producers. Now, under the New Deal communist program introduced by the New Deal in the 1930s, they said, no, French wine can come into the United States and you can sell it cheaper here than the people in Napa Valley. Well, then, if that's the case, then Americans will drink more French wine and less American wine, and so American workers lose their jobs, don't they? I just thought I'd point that out to you. Now, if you want Japanese car companies and car makers to bring their products into the United States and sell them cheaper than Chevrolet and Dodge and Ford, well, fine. But now you got to pay the piper for it. So if you thought free trade was a free ride, well, wake up and smell the coffee here, kids, because here's the results of it. Now, this race to the bottom is already on in the United States. And that's where you're headed. Now, at some point in time, the government steps in and says, well, we're going to control that. We're going to put in these wage and price controls. Well, when you put in these price controls, we stop renovating apartments. We don't raise the rents. And so you're complaining that we won't fix anything. And then you're living in a slum like you people in New York. See? So you're either paying $1 million for an apartment in Manhattan or you're living in a slum in the Bronx. You know, take your choice. But there's no marketplace in housing in New York City. And that's why you have this disparity. You got the rich living in Manhattan, and you got the poor living out in Harlem or Bronx or someplace, you know, in tenement places that are falling down, and the landlords won't fix them up, and they call them slumlords. It's because you got price controls. You got rent control in New York. That's what your problem is. You don't have a marketplace there. You see, you got a shortage of good housing in New York, but you don't have any shortage of marijuana, crack, cocaine, or heroin. That's because the drugs are being sold in the free marketplace. I told you that last time, remember? All right, now, listen to this. You got additional difficulties. You can expect wage and price controls. So what are you going to do? How are you going to get around these wage and price controls? How can you protect your employees' buying power while simultaneously protecting your business and profit margins? Shortages are going to come up. Low margin, highly competitive items quickly disappear, as do products whose regulated price is set below production cost. Look for shortages of basic foods and basic goods. Locate and cultivate sources of supply before you need them, because hyperinflation, as it progresses, more and more companies, including your suppliers, are going to be going out of business. So you have to have your supplies identified in advance for what your business needs. For example, if you're a farmer, have you got 3 or 4 feed stores lined up so that when 1, 2, or 3 of them goes upside down, you got a place to buy feed? And how do you know they're going to have enough feed to satisfy all of the demand for all of you farmers out there when there's only 1 feed store instead of 4? And isn't this going to add to your transportation costs when you have to drive all the way to Springfield to pick it up at Tyndall's instead of going over here to Terry's in Theodosia? Have you got that programmed into your business model? Think about it. Now, since all of the other fiat currencies in the world, the yen, the euro, Swiss franc, and so on, are all just as rotten as the dollar, what's your best alternative for stockpiling and safeguarding your capital and your savings? and the answer is gold and silver. Obviously, you can hold physical gold and silver yourself and liquidate it whenever you need it. As the hyperinflation progresses, you will more and more be able to use the silver and gold directly as currency. All right, I got to give you a reminder here, boys and girls, and then we'll come back and we'll take a look at gold and silver as a panacea. Do you think that gold and silver is going to solve everybody's problems all the time? And we'll hang on and we'll explore that when we come back. Meanwhile, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. So keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile. Sometimes they're kind of mean. They can be political or religious. Sometimes they're economic or sectarian. They can be racial. They can be ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. However, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So don't blame any of those people out there. Just send all of your emails and your mean statements to me. Now, if you would like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the money changer for January 2009. Let me give you this guy's name and address. The Money Changer has a webpage. So if you want to just hit their webpage, it's www.the-moneychanger.com. It's an easy one. It's themoneychanger.com, but there's a hyphen between the and money. Sometimes people will call here at the law school and they'll say, well, I can't get your archives, Mr. Gordon. Well, sometimes they're tuning in to some other feeder, you know, that we're linked up to, and then that feeder shut us off, and then they can't get me anymore. If you'll go to georgegordon.org. I told a guy that the other day. He says, well, I am. And then the answer was, no, he wasn't. He was going to We the People. I've been on We the People for years and years and years, and so that's where he was going. So, well, I'm tuning in to you, Mr. Gordon. I'm tuning in to you. No, you're not. It's georgegordon.org. It's not We the People anymore. They dropped us. They don't carry our programs anymore. So keep in mind that oftentimes, you know, you'll be listening to a radio station, and then that station doesn't carry us anymore, and then they'll call here and they'll say, what happened to you? You're off the air here. And East Podunk, New York. And, well, I wasn't buying the radio time there in East Podunk, New York to start with. The radio station picks us up off of the Internet. They download us and they play us free. That's the advantage that radio stations have. They can play this free. They don't have to pay ASCAP or somebody else a fee or a royalty, you know, for their programming. And so as a result of that, sometimes they'll carry us and sometimes they don't. So when they drop us, you know, you can always hear us on georgegordon.org. If you just go to your Internet and plug in. I'm not always up to the minute, you know. Sometimes I'm a week or two behind. But I send these out of here every day. These programs, oh, not every day, every week. Every Friday, these programs go out to our producer, who then puts them up on the Internet and does the cutting and splicing and music and all the stuff that goes into it. And I'm pretty well up to date as I speak. You know, sometimes I get behind a week or two. All right, we're talking about the money changer here and hyperinflation and the likelihood that this is going to happen. Now, in the paper here, Franklin Sanders says he thinks that that's not very likely to happen because it's counterproductive. Well, you can say that again. I couldn't agree with you more. Hyperinflation's got to be the worst possible alternative. The only people that would opt for hyperinflation have to be sociopathic criminals. You'd have to be a lunatic, a madman. And I submit to you that that's exactly who's in control of our government, sociopathic criminal madmen. I don't have any other adjectives to describe the lunacy that's going on out here. And then the people of America are insane. I mean, you people voted this in. You people out there, they told you that change is coming. And I said, you know, up until the election, I said, by God, you're right, change is coming. I don't think it's good change, but you're going to get change. Now, for the rest of us out here, if you're getting nervous right now, you need to take some action. If you're not nervous, well, obviously you're pretty happy with the status quo. Stick with the program. Reality will slap you up alongside the head one of these days. And when it does, well, then you heard it here first. Always remember that. You heard it here first. I told you. There was a lady the other day, a listener who called in and said, I've been telling my mother what I've been hearing from you, Mr. Gordon. And I told her to sell that house, and she sold it at the top, and she collected the money, and she's saying, oh, I'm so thankful that I sold my house at the top, because now it's lost all this value. But she doesn't want to sell her stocks. Well, now, when the stocks were up to their peak back in 2000, they dropped off, and then they bubbled back up to 14,000, and now they've dropped off again. And I said to the guy, I said, well, what business is it of yours? He said, well, that's my mother. I said, well, did you earn the money? Is she out here spending your money? He said, no. I said, is that her money? He said, yeah. And she wants to spend it in the stock market. Yeah. Okay, well, what concern is that of yours? His concern is, well, that's my inheritance, and it's being evaporated by the banks and Wall Street thieves. Well, that's true. But it's her money, and it's her inheritance to give, and an inheritance is a gift. And if she doesn't want to give you the inheritance in the form of money, she wants to give it to you in the form of worthless stocks, well, then, you know, thank her for it and be done with it. Now, if you're in that boat and you're watching people's their life savings and you're watching their economy just evaporate, hell, those people all had choices to make, and they made their choice. So what's the problem? Now, if they're spending your money, I can see your complaint. But, you know, they're, for the most part, I'm watching this too. And I'm watching my friends and my neighbors. I've got my boy's got an uncle over here, see. And this uncle invested heavily in the dot-com bubble back before 2000. He was in computers himself. He's retired now. And he made a lot of money in this dot-com bubble, just tons of money. And that's when people had more money than sense, back in the 90s. Well, then in 2000, the thing collapsed. And he lost around 50% of everything that he had in stocks. But he said, I'm going to stick with my stocks then they will rebound. And sure enough, they did. Now, they never rebounded to the level that they were in 2000, but they did rebound by quite a bit. And so I wouldn't tell Terry what to do because, you know, he's nothing to me one way or the other. But I was talking to Dirk the other day, and Dirk told his Uncle Terry, he said, well, Terry, I think we've about reached the peak here. And when the thing just hit 14,000, it's because we were reading the international forecaster, and Bob Chapman said, this is it. Now, if you've got stocks, get rid of your stocks because it's downhill from there. Now, when a stock market hits 14,000, it doesn't just fall to 8,000 in 24 hours. It occurs over a period of months and years, which is what's happened here. It reached its peak, as I recall, in October of 2007. So you can put this one down for Bob Chapman, see, in the international forecaster. He picked the peak when it hit 14,000. Then it went up from 14,000, went to 14,100 and something. See. And it leveled off, and then went down and up and down and up and down. And then, you know, then 2008 came along, and so it's been going down, down, down. Now, as I speak, it's down around 8,000. And here's Uncle Terry. Now he's hanging on to his money. Hanging on to his stocks in the stock market. He's got his money all fully invested in stocks, waiting for the 8,000 to go back to 14 and then 14 to go to 28. Okay. So in order for him to get back, now, of course, he's not invested in the Dow Jones. He's invested now in the NASDAQ, see, and it hit 5,000. Well, when it was at 5,000 back in 2000, if he'd have sold out and put it into gold, the guy would be filthy rich today, but he didn't do that. He stuck with the stocks until they went down. Okay, now as I speak, I think that the NASDAQ is down around 1,500. So it went down, you know, around 5,000 to 1,500. So it's down, is that 75%, 65%, something like that? 75%, I guess. It's down about 75%. Now, Dirk said to him the other day, he says, why don't you sell everything you've got right now and put it into gold, because I think gold is going to go to $2,000 an ounce. And then Uncle Terry says, no, I lost my money in stocks. I'm sticking with the stocks. I think that Uncle Terry is going to lose all of his money in the stock market, or, you know, a whole lot more than he's got now. And I don't know. I'm not a prophet. I can't tell you that the price of gold is going to go to $2,000 an ounce. Hell, I don't know that. I listen to all these pundits out here just like you do, and I've been listening to this $2,000, $4,000, $8,000 an ounce prediction here, you know, for the last two or three years. It hasn't materialized yet. But I think I would rather have gold. Now, I had a couple of gold coins, and I noticed that in the year 2008, my two gold coins gained 5.6%. I don't know of anything else that gained anything in 2008, do you? I mean, I'm sure that there were some other investments that probably made more than 5%. My two gold coins that I've had since 2000 haven't lost any money in any year from that period to this, but the stocks have. Now, I'm sure that you people out there that are investing and buying and selling stocks and bonds and so on are just making a killing. And if you are, then you need to stay right where you're at, because I'm sure that you're a very competent and skillful bond and stock trader. I'm not, so I'm just sticking with my two gold coins, and I thought I'd pass that on to you as a safety tip, just as a safety tip. Now, remember, this is Franklin Sanders, the money changer, and I'm recommending it because this guy, you know, has a good head on his shoulders. And that's what I think of him. And I read his paper every month. In fact, I look forward to the Sanders. He's totally different than Bob Chapman, and Chapman and Sanders are totally different than this guy from Australia. His name is Bill Buckler, who writes the Privateer. So when somebody's brand new in the game and they're asking me, you know, what would you recommend as a newsletter? I always recommend the Privateer first. Privateer first for newcomers. And that's because Buckler just has a knack for education and teaching that nobody else has. And he puts it in the simplest of terms. And I don't care if you're a housewife or a truck driver and dropped out of high school in your sophomore year because you were pregnant. You can understand the Buckler Privateer newsletter. I don't care who you are. You can understand it. Bob Chapman is a whole lot more comprehensive, but, you know, he also uses big words that sometimes I have to go look up. Now, I'm going to pass one more little piece off to you here in just a second. Listen to this. Looking here at hyperinflation now, page 11. Let me flip back here to page 11. He goes on, he says, now, gold money is the sole storage scheme that I recommend or have recommended. And if you run a business and you have large amounts of money to safeguard, large amounts of money, you need fast liquidity. And for those purposes, you ought to consider an account with gold money from www.goldmoney.com. Now, that guy's name is James Turk. Now, this guy, James Turk, runs a bank. It's a gold and silver bank. This is what it really boils down to. Now, I was in the business world for many years, and I can tell you that if you're in business, you have to have a bank. You know, if you're in straight commercial business, and that's because your customers all pay you with checks, and all of your suppliers. I mean, I used to run a business with 30 employees. You know, what are you going to do? Line up and pay all these guys in $20 bills? You're going to go to the bank. How are you going to get the $20 bills? You see, if you walk into the bank and you say, I need $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 in cash, you're not going to get it because you're not a customer of the bank. Banks are private companies, private institutions. I don't know if you understood that or not. Banks are just like any other private business. They won't sell to you if they don't want to. Walk into the bank and tell them that you want 100 10-cent coin rolls. Do you have an account here? No. Well, then hike. Go someplace else. The banks are not there as a public service. Lawyers don't operate law firms because they're out here, you know, conducting some public service. Those are profit-making companies. And if you don't do business with them, they don't do business with you. So if you're going to operate a business here, you got to have some way that you can convert gold and silver into money, that is, you know, Federal Reserve note money. And this stuff is depreciating right now as I speak at the rate of 12% per annum. And you're sitting there telling me, we've got deflation going on. No, you got inflation going on. It's 12% a year. And if you think we're suffering from deflation and you've been to public school again and you haven't been able to count for a long time, and so this business thing is probably not your cup of tea, but I just wanted to pass it on to you that now gold money is the sole storage scheme that I recommend or have recommended, and I have known the founder and patent holder, James Turk, since 1985, and I know him to be a man of integrity. Better still, the silver and gold is stored outside the United States. I'm going to underline that. Better still, the gold and silver is stored outside the United States and is audited by an outside third-party auditing firm, so gold money is transparent enough for you to see whether your metals are really there or not. And through the Internet, you can order your gold money holdings liquidated, and within 48 hours, you can receive a bank wire in your U.S. bank account. Okay, so now we're assuming you've got a U.S. bank account. Now, I want to tell you that George Gordon doesn't have a U.S. bank account, and I don't deal in Federal Reserve notes, and I don't have a James Turk gold and silver account either. Now, I'm not opposed to James Turk. I have a great respect for James Turk. He publishes a newsletter also, and there's another guy that's got his head on straight, and that's why he deals in gold and silver, but I want to pass along a little word of warning here to you. My old friend, Frank, the gold broker out in Boise, Idaho, called me in August of 2007. Now, this is August of 07, before this thing got started good. Remember, the recession began in December of 07. So before the recession began, Frank called me, and he said, George, I'm going to change my policy here. And I've been doing business with this guy for, oh, hell, 20 years, Frank the gold broker. And I've recommended him to you students out there for years and years. Well, Frank called me one day, And he says, I got to have a policy change here. And I said, well, what's going on, Frank? And he said, I'm no longer going to guarantee delivery of your order. I was absolutely shocked. I couldn't believe that I'd just heard this. If Frank had told me I have just converted to Catholicism, I couldn't have been any shockeder than I was when he said, George, I'm no longer going to guarantee delivery of your metal. And I said, Frank, I think I heard you right. Can you explain that? And he said, well, here's what the problem is. He said, all of the banks in the United States are insolvent. Now, this comes from Frank the Gold Broker, who is a banker. He's an ex-Marine from the Korean War. He's an ex-banker, trained as an elitist, illuminist, insider banker at the University of Washington back in the 1950s. I mean, this guy knows where the bodies are buried, so I can't guarantee. All the banks are insolvent. I can't guarantee. I'm not going to guarantee delivery. I said, oh, my God, Frank, you're taking my breath away. And he said, well, here's the way the world is working right now. He said, in order for me to act as a gold broker, I have to have a bank account. And so I take your money. You send me a check or a money order or some piece of paper. And I deposit that in my bank account. I write a check on my bank account, and I send that off to my supplier in Menlo Park, California. My supplier in Menlo Park, California, deposits my check in his bank, and he writes a check to his supplier. And this goes on up the chain until finally, where the metal is actually kept in West Point, New York, somebody writes a check to the United States Treasury and takes delivery of the gold and passes it down the line to each one of the suppliers in the chain until it finally comes to me. And I said, okay, Frank, I follow you. I understand that, and I've known that that's the way the game is played. And he said, now all the banks are insolvent. And he said, I can take your money and put it in my bank. And my bank could be swallowed up as insolvent. Now, I don't know if you're watching this, but if you're reading the International Forecaster, Bob Chapman, every publication says this is the Friday Night Massacre. Now, so far in the year 2009, see if I remember this now, 2009, I think about 15 banks now, as I recall, 15 banks have now gone broke. And there's 171, I remember that number, 171 on the watch list. Last year, 25 banks went broke. All right, now, this is back in August of 2007 when Frank is talking to me now. Remember this, August of 2007. He says, I can't guarantee that when you send me your check, your money, your paper instruments, and I deposit them in my bank, I don't know but what my bank's going to go broke, or my supplier's bank is going to go broke or on up the line until I don't get the metal. And he says, I don't want to take your money and guarantee delivery anymore. I can't. I don't know if I'm going to get delivery. I don't know if my bank is going to be in business tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. I don't know if my account's going to be seized or not. So, as a result of that, I just wanted to tell you up front, when you send me your money, if you get your metal, good for you. But if you don't get your metal, don't blame me. So when I read this from Franklin Sanders, and he says, okay, I'm going to put my money, and this is outside the United States. I'm sure that James Turk is an honest man, and I'm sure that Franklin Sanders is an honest man. And I'm sure that James Turk, when he takes your money and puts it in the bank, has every intention of giving you your metal. I just wanted to point out to you, what in the hell makes you think that when James Turk writes a check that his bank is going to honor his check when they go broke? What makes you think that James Turk's bank anywhere in the world is solvent? Nothing against James Turk, nothing against Franklin Sanders. I'm just telling you that anytime your money is outside of your left pocket, it's not safe. That's what I'm telling you. Anytime your money is outside your left pocket, it's at risk. So, if you're prepared to take the risk, Old Frank the gold broker gave me a piece of advice. Let me pass it on to you. He said, quote, never risk more than you can afford to lose. Can you remember that, boys and girls? Never risk more than you can afford to lose. And anytime your money is outside your left pocket, it's at risk. Never take more money out of your left pocket than you can afford to lose. Can you follow that? That's a piece of safety advice. No? If you get burned and you lose your money, and this is what people are reporting to me, I put my money over here and I lost it. Okay. If you put your money over there, it was outside your left pocket, wasn't it? It's a choice that you had to make, and you made it, didn't you? Well, you know, I take my money out of my left pocket every once in a while, but I don't take any more out of there than I can afford to lose. And so I follow that advice. I learned it from a banker, an insider banker, and I'm passing it on to you. Now, this bailout scheme that's going on around us over here makes all the sense in the world for the banks, and I don't harbor any grudges against the bankers and all of the insiders. I mean, hell, they got, you know, wives and kids and mortgages to pay and bills to pay like everybody else. It's just that I don't want to pay their bills for them. That's all. I make my choices in life, and when I make a bad choice, I lose. And when I lose, I lick my wounds, and that's just too bad for me. There's nobody out there in Washington or in Jefferson City that's taxing you and sending me your money. I don't have that. So I got to take care of what I got. Now, unless you got some inside track and you can sidle up to the pig trough like the bankers are doing in Washington, well, then maybe you better be thinking about hanging on to what you got. Hang on to what you got, because hyperinflation is my bet. Now, let me tell you again, the guy's name here is Franklin Sanders, and he's got good sound reasoning, good sound advice, and I'm not shortchanging the guy. But when somebody tells me to put my money over here, somebody else's account outside the country over here, what makes you think you're going to get your money back? When things really get rough, now as long as business is going along and things are fine, that's fine. There's no problems. Boys and girls, things are bad now and they're going to get a lot worse. And when they get a lot worse, if things are bad now and things are working for you all right, what makes you think they're going to work all right when they get worse? So if you've got money in the stock market, that's fine. I wouldn't tell you to take it out. That's your choice in life. But I think the stock market is going down to at least 1540. That's where I think the Dow Jones is headed, 1540. And probably lower than that, but at least to 1540. Now, if it's at 8,000 today and you want to write it down to 1540, be my guest. I'm not here to tell you what to do. And then you can hang on to it like Uncle Terry over here until it goes back to 5,000. I don't know when the stock market's going back to 5,000. You know, that's that dot-com thing, whatever they call it. And it may next year. I can't tell you that. I'm not a prophet. But I'm not betting on that scenario. But I am betting on gold and silver, and I am betting on goods in hand. And I think that's the safe way to go. Hey, I'm running out of time here again, kids. I'm going to have to cut it off right there, and we'll take it up here next time. Talking about likelihoods for 2009. What do you think's coming? We'll talk more about it next time. Meanwhile, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on a compact disc, and the law hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now our time's up, and we got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.